Right, here we go. Evening. Welcome to the 12 Man Podcast, live on Facebook, YouTube, the Red Radio, on DAB. Yeah, we are live, we're ready, we're going to get going. Got me, C. Jackson, I'm in the main chair. Hello. I'm actually on cameras this week, so it's a bit weird. Got Mr. John Donovan's with us. Evening, John Don.
Good evening, lads. You okay?
Yeah, we're doing good, mate. Doing good. Are you okay?
Yeah, very well.
Good. We've got Mr. Steve Dixon with us. Evening, Dicko.
Evening, fellas. Everybody all right?
Yeah, good. We're good.
Yeah, we're good.
And special guest, entrepreneur, cartoonist, legend, Mr. Graham Bandera is back with us. Evening, Bandy.
Evening, Jacko. Evening, lads. You all right?
Yeah, all good, mate. Thanks.
Good. You are a legend, so don't ever say different. So, yeah, absolute legend, this guy. He's actually going to show us something a little bit later. Not like that. Because we've actually got something to give away for his. So, yeah, stay tuned, keep an eye out, and, yeah, I'll let you know what it is later on. First, before we start, you know, are we doing all right? We all good?
Just about all
well.
Last week, just about. Still a bit angry, to be honest, but we might talk about that a bit later. But yeah, all good. Ready for Sunday now.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. I say we'll talk about Chelsea. It was a bit of a, yeah, it took me a couple of days to get over it. That journey home was enough for me. It just sent it to take forever. But it was what it was, wasn't it? Yeah, we dared to dream. That's all we can say. But not to spoil it. But yeah, we'll talk about Chelsea. We'll talk about transfers because there's, you know, we've had one in. We've had this new signing. There's talks of one leaving. So we'll get, you know, we'll have a look, see what we can find out about that, and then we'll preview the derby that's not a derby on Sunday. They're in town. So, yes, high noon, Riverside, should be a good one. Right, here we go. Let's get it over and done with. John Don, on the way down to London last Tuesday, I felt quite, I wouldn't say optimistic, but I felt something was about to happen. You know, all bus was in good spirits, we were all in good spirits. We got down into West London, everybody was just bouncing and up for it, and it was a general good day out, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. You know, you're a little bit cautious travelling into the city because you don't know whether or not the plans you made, whether they're going to come off. You know, we had a pub booked for 5 o'clock, but, you know, it's notorious trying to get around and then into London at that time of day. But thankfully, we didn't have any traffic problems. Our driver and his co-driver looked after us extremely well. So, yeah, it went smoothly. Everything was set up for a good night.
Jason will love you saying that. He'll absolutely love you saying that because I know he's listening right now. But no, I thought they both did really well, our drivers. They navigated us through that London traffic really well and got us to the pub in good time. It was bouncing, it was absolutely amazing, and that's where we saw our guest on screen there. Bandy was there, he was waiting, drinking hands. Tell me about the pub, Bandy. The pub was absolutely bouncing before we got to Stamford Bridge, wasn't it?
Jumping. We got in there quite early from about just after 3 o'clock, to be honest, about 3:30. So we watched it gradually fill up. So it was a nice feeling when JD's bus rocked up, new guys turned up, so that livened things up somewhat. Obviously, by 7 o'clock, it was absolutely bouncing, and it was one of them places where you don't want to leave because it was that good. And obviously, we all set about our ways down to Stamford Bridge, and that was slightly different. Bit of a come down, really, compared to the afternoon's frivolities.
Yeah, it was. It was a bit of a come down, wasn't it? I mean, we're going to have to talk about the game, aren't we? But Dicko, talk to me about the lineup, because, you know, the lineup came out. I didn't know if it was a 4 or a 5. I don't know if he gambled or not. I mean, he's come out after the game and said, yeah, I got it wrong. And it turned out it was really wrong. But it just looked a bit indecisive about where we were playing on Tuesday night.
I would have probably said a completely different story to what I'm going to say tonight if you had asked me on the night of the game or the next day. But now I've had time to digest it. I actually, on the night, felt a little bit sorry for Michael Carrick. Because I think the moment Isaiah Jones went down injured against Rotherham, that was the end of our cup hopes. We were down to the bare bones anyway, and what we really needed to go to Stamford Bridge was an out ball. Yeah. We needed somebody with pace, somebody that could stretch them, get them turning the other way. And when Isaiah Jones went off injured, obviously with Latty Alath being out injured and Bangura being out injured, we had no options and we had a team bereft of pace. And I think, to be fair to Michael Carrick, what he tried to do was be clever with his tactics. And he knew the back five had worked very well against Aston Villa. And it had also worked very well against Chelsea at home. But because of his lack of options and because of Isaiah Jones getting injured, he was caught in the middle of what to do. And so I think he thought, I'll try and come up with a tactic that gives a bit of both. And Johnny Howson was that option. And Johnny Howson was going to be the player that give with a man, extra man in midfield, but also when we're under pressure, was going to drop into the back five and make it a five. But on the night, it just didn't work because Johnny Howson actually became a hindrance. Dale Fry didn't know where Johnny Howson was playing, what he was doing when he dropped back in. Mm-hmm. Vandenberg didn't know whether to go out wide and mark the man out wide or what Howson was doing. It just looked cluttered and it just didn't work. And it was pretty evident early on in the game that it wasn't working. And I'd say my only criticism of Carrick on the night was he didn't change it quick enough when it wasn't working. It was pretty obvious it wasn't working. But he stuck with it and he stuck with it and he stuck with it. And that was a downfall on the night. But you had to try something different because, you know, Chelsea have got world-class players and they're brilliant at the press. And the pressed were in. And the force went to making mistakes, basic mistakes. And Carrick himself, you know, the first two goals weren't great, but the goals three and four were basic errors that you would see anyway on a Sunday morning. Really poor. You can't play out from the back against Chelsea like that. And we didn't learn a lesson with that either. So I'd say the only criticism was we didn't learn a lesson by Michael Carrick not changing the tactic with Howson, and also Middlesbrough on the night was struggling to play out from the back, and it was cost with time and time again. So, yeah. Look, we can go through the game, we can go through the goals, we can be critical about certain players, certain mistakes they made, but I feel on the night we were really unlucky because Carrick got dealt a really poor hand what he could pick from.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say we were unlucky. I thought four of the six goals were our faults. It was just really poor, but
that's what I'm saying. We can go through and we can point fingers at certain players and certain goals, and this wasn't good and that wasn't good.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of our downfall was literally what we had to pick from. If you're playing against the side in Chelsea that press you very very well and have got pace all over the park. Middlesbrough didn't have an out ball. And like I say, the moment Isaiah Jones went down against Rotherham, that was us knackered for me, because what options did we have? Really, if you're clearing the ball as a defender, if you're a midfielder and you get the ball in midfield and you get your head up and look, what are you passing to? What have we got to turn Chelsea the other way? We had nothing. And it was, you know, as Tony Mowbray says, it is what it is. We couldn't compete with players at that level.
No, it was, yeah, end of the day, Chelsea were just so much better, and we were never going to have Chelsea were never going to have two off nights for us to have our moments. And I mean, I fully accepted it was coming, but to watch it happen as it did, it really, really did hurt. It was horrible. It was horrible to see. I mean, I'll hold my hands up and I'll say I only lasted till about 55 minutes, and I went, that's me done. I can't watch anymore. I can't. And I mean, to be fair, it took me that long to get back to our bus because it was parked that far away. I had to go and look for it. So, but yeah, it was. I mean, JD, to be stood at half time, 4-0 down. I mean, we knew it could have been bad, but that's as bad as it could have got, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think we all spoke about it on the way down, you know, that we had to keep it tight for 20 minutes or so, you know, try and frustrate them, and hope that the crowd get on their back and put them under pressure and they make mistakes. But it was us that was making mistakes, you know, really. Yeah, they're a far better team quality-wise than we are. But we still beat them at the Riverside. We just didn't help ourselves at all last week. We just, yeah, like Dicko says, a lot of Chelsea's forward play was due to our poor performance. You know, we couldn't hold on to the ball. He's right. We didn't have an outlet. We didn't have a big man to hit when we just wanted to, or sometimes needed to clear our lines. We didn't have pace to look for because there was none in the midfield or the attack. So it was always going to be very, very difficult. But we should have made it slightly more difficult. But we handed Chelsea the game on a plate, really. And I think we all realised, you know, that it was going to be a tough task. But we didn't realise that we were going to make it so easy for them.
Yeah, it was like we laid down for them, and it was just the fact that the second, third, and fourth goals came as quick as they did, and I thought that was a bit of a shock to the system. There's no shame in getting beat by a better team like that. There's no shame at all. But it was just, it was too, yeah, it was painful, especially semi-final. I just thought we let them have it a bit too easy. But I'll say something, Bandy. I preach every week we've got the best fans in the world, right? And I think millions upon millions of people realised that last Tuesday, because them fans never stopped. Doesn't matter how bad it got. They were the loudest fans. That them Chelsea fans have probably heard all season, because they were absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, they were. We were brilliant, to be honest. I think when you're on the receiving end of a battering like that, you've just got to try and wipe the result from your mind, really, and forget that there's a game of football going on. You just got to do your town proud, and there's no doubt that we did that. You know, we were the talk of the nation, really. You only had to go on social media, and there was a lot of accolades thrown our way. So, you know, in terms of support, 10 out of 10. In terms of team performance, it was very, very inept from my point of view. Dare I say tactical suicide? I don't want to get too critical of Carrick, because he's not the type of guy that we should be criticising. He's been absolutely immense for us.
But yeah,
I just thought he tried to be a little bit too brave on the night. Obviously, it was a big game. A game of that magnitude in front of, you know, the watching nation. He probably wanted to try something quite bold and hope that it would come off. But to play like it was a back four, but dropping Housen in there to make it a back five when we were under pressure just didn't work, because Housen didn't know whether to stick or twist. And the fact that he played just the two in terms of Housen and Balazar, it just didn't work. And we had Hackney just basically eliminated on the left wing. I mean, he broke up that trio, which was so pivotal to that win in the first leg. And I don't know why he did that. He could have made one simple change for me, and possibly, I know he's not a wing back, but I would have tried to have got Force to play wide right, but also track back and get Van der Berg to pull across a little bit, just to try and double up on whoever was playing on the left side that particular night. I think it was Mudrick, but he kept swapping with Sterling. But I think they could have done a relatively decent job, and we would have kept the basis of that shape, which served us so well. in that first game. So to break it all up for the loss of one player was a bit suicidal for me. And I'd still obviously forgiven him, but it's still back of my mind thinking we didn't do ourselves justice on the night. We could have picked a different team, and I don't think we would have got absolutely smashed like we did. We did play into their hands completely, and they just robbed us of the ball in key positions. They didn't even really have to think too much about beating us because we just handed it to them on the plate, took full advantage.
I think we could have easily, you know, started with a back five. I mean, he came on at half-time, Dyke Steele. If we'd have started with a back five and then a 5-4-1, not even a 5-5-0, just to, you know, just for the first 20 minutes, half an hour. It's easily sort of talked about now in hindsight. I fully appreciate that. But I would have loved us just to not be adventurous in any way, but just consolidate for the first 20 minutes and then assess it as the game wore on. But by 20 minutes, we were out of the tie virtually, weren't we?
Yeah.
20 minutes in, we could have still been frustrating them. We did have a goal to protect. So instinct says to me, protect what you've got. Don't try and get another goal, especially there when they've got so much pace and skill in the final third that they can rip me apart, and they did. Still a little bit sickened in the way we bowed out, really. I thought we could have made it more of a game. It was a tall order to go down there and get a draw or a win. I understand that, but it was the manner of the defeat that still, you know, leaves me sick to the stomach, really. It was
apparently at the press conference after the game, a few of the press were questioning Michael Carrick regarding Middlesbrough playing out from the back and not learning the lesson and continue to keep doing so and getting caught and costing with goals. And he come out with a few quotes and a few words which I thought were quite telling. He more or less said, look, I get these players Monday to Friday and I train them in a certain way and how to play and try to give them confidence in a certain way and tell them how good they are to be brave and be brave on the ball and play. He said, now I know we're down to the bare bones and had players missing and stuff, but these players, I'm telling them, you'll get your chance when you come in. You've got to come in and play a certain way and be brave and do this and do that. It's hard to turn around to those players. And so, by the way, just rip it up now. We're playing a good team, Chelsea. They're far better than what you are. You can't play like that against them because you're not good enough. And start telling players reverse psychology that now you're not good enough. Just boot the ball up the pitch or stick the ball in the channel or lash it into the stand. He said he was quite in his brain. He still wanted to have that message that we play that way and you are good enough to play that way, whether it's against Chelsea or it's against Rotherham. So I thought that was quite telling that Michael Carrick's really, you know, he's got that way of playing and the way his teams want to play, and he won't just bow down because we're playing a better quality of side. Now, you can call that naive, you can call it stupid, to be fair. And on the night, it probably was stupid. And as Graham said earlier, it was almost tactical suicide at times because we did just hand Chelsea the game. But it shows that he's a brave manager. He believes in the way he wants to play, and that's what he's going to do. And eventually, these players, he thinks he'll get it, and it'll click.
Yeah.
And we'll get it right. And just on the fans, because I don't want to pass by without mentioning the supporters, because I was watching at home. And it was a painful night, bordering on embarrassing, watching it at home, because we're in front of the eyes of the nation and all the other teams in the country and supporters around the country are watching our team, Middlesbrough. And it was borderline and on embarrassing, because other fans of other clubs, they don't know what injury problems we've got. They don't care what injury problems we've got. They're just watching the game on the night. They're probably, half of them haven't watched Middlesbrough all season. And it was a bad reflection on the team and Michael Carrick in many ways in that first half. But what was magnificent for me was the supporters. My pride at the end of that game, my chest was bursting with pride, watching the scenes as Michael Carrick going across and the players, and that the army of fans behind the goal with the flags out and the banners and singing and dancing. And the Chelsea ground emptying, the Chelsea end leaving. They just went got the final, just beat Middlesbrough by 6, and they're leaving. And the Borough fans stood loyal and loud as they were all game. And my chest was bursting with pride. And I thought you almost forgot what had went on in the game. because that was the story of the night. It was, and like Graham said earlier, we've got good press coverage because of that in the national press, on the TV, of look at these supporters. Look what it, you'd think they've won 6-1, not lost 6-1. And for me, that was the story of the night. And like we always see on here, biased, I know, but we do have the best fans. We do have the best fans. And it was a real credit to Middlesbrough Football Club on the night, was the supporters. That, you know, it was incredible. So well done, each and every one of you that was there.
Thanks.
It was. I mean, it was great. It was great as the game sort of wore on. Like I said, at halftime, everybody knew the game was dead and buried. But as the game wore on, you know, the level of noise just built and built, as if to say, okay, we're here. We might as well show our love for the team and love for the manager, love for the club, love for the area. So we just sort of continued to sort of like build up towards the end, and then we got our goal. We celebrated like it was a winning goal. And then at the end of the game, the players, the subs, the management team came over, gave us absolutely sort of, you know, the same part embarrassed and part proud by what they were listening to, what they were seeing. But it was good. It was good to share. Every fan that was part of that can be rightly proud.
I don't think they were embarrassed. I think they were humbled is a better word. I think they were humbled by it. You know, I think they looked at the fans and they just thought, we don't deserve this. We are actually humbled by yous doing what yous are doing behind that goal. And it was a wonderful to watch on TV. And obviously you guys were there. It would have been wonderful for yous being there as well to see that.
I thought the humour was brilliant from our fans as well. It does get to a point where you do care, but you can't show that you care too much. They got a 6th goal and their fans were leaving. And I can't get my head around that at all. So we were singing, you know, cheerio, cheerio. We can see you sneaking out. And the psychology regarding that is just, it's just brilliant. It's dark humour from Borough fans, and it was brilliant to see. So things like that, it sort of made the night as well. It topped the night off quite nicely, really. Because by then I'd forgotten the result anyway, and it was just a case of right, the season starts now. Basically, we've had the fun in the sun, so now's the time to get down to business and get some points on the board.
Well, the thing is, Bandy, one avenue to Wembley was lost. There's still another one.
Yeah, it was a bridge too far.
It was.
Well said.
It was. I mean, it shows how bad their fans were. I mean, I held my hand up. I went at 55 minutes. I went to go and get my flag back, which I got pinched off me for some strange reason. I'm not going to go into because I'll get annoyed again. It took the young man below me on that screen to calm me down because I was about to kick right off. Got my flag back. And there was fans leaving. There was Chelsea fans leaving. I stopped one and said, why are you going? He went, I need to get home. Why did you bother? You know what I mean? Why'd you bother? Yeah.
I'm sure if it was sort of 1-1 on aggregate or just sort of one goal in it, that there wouldn't have been leaving then.
Exactly. It was a really strange, surreal thing watching a load of fans heading towards Fulham Broadway to go home. I was like, these aren't football fans, these are tourists. And I'll happily say that, and people can clip it all they want. I don't care. They're tourists. They're fans. They really were. The fans to the right of us. I've never seen so many mobile phones when Ben Chilwell tried to take a corner. I thought, what am I watching? What am I watching here? It was, yeah. I'm glad that I support the football club I do, and the football team I do. So it was a bad result. It was a bad night, but immensely proud and, you know, proud to be part of that group of fans that gave it absolutely everything, no matter what. It doesn't matter what the result was. And we scored the goal of the night for me. I thought Rodgers' goal was an absolute beaut.
It was a good one. It was good. I think it's safe to say they embarrassed us on the pitch and we embarrassed them off it. Yeah. So
spot on.
Let's call it 1-1.
Does that mean we go winning?
The thing is, regarding our run, we done well. I got to a ground that I've never been to before in Exeter. Some lasses will have been to other grounds the first time, the likes of Port Vale, Bradford, who we haven't played for many, many years, you know. So, the run was a good one. It's earned the club a bit of prestige. It's earned the club some finance. And we've had some great away days. So it's now over and we concentrate on the bread and butter stuff now. And like I say, hopefully finding another avenue to Wembley.
Aye. Don't mind bread and butter, so that'll do me for the next 3 months. That door's shut now. It's over. I'd ask you who your man of the match was on last Tuesday, but I'm not going to ask you because I'm just going to give it to the fans. I thought the fans were absolutely magnificent, and I thought you could just tell when you looked at Carrick's face, when you looked at the fans, he just thought, "Wow, I thought you were amazing." But that's just something else, and it's quite nice to know that we've got. There's always going to be a manager come from the special generation of England players. I didn't think it'd be ours, you know. Gerrard, Lampard, all them have had a go. We've got the special manager out of a lot of them. So, yeah, enjoy him while he's here. That's all I'm going to say. He's an amazing, amazing man. So, yeah. Right, I'll move on. Transfer news. Who wants to talk about transfer news? Right. So, one in. Club snuck one on us on, is it Friday? Yeah. We'll go Friday.
Late Friday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Late in the day.
Yeah, it was. Luke Thomas, on loan from Leicester. I'm certain he was at Sheffield United. Am I wrong there when I'm thinking that?
He was at Sheffield United this season. He's been playing in the Premier League for them this season.
Yeah.
And Sheffield United, they've let him go back to Leicester to free up some finance for them to do business in January. And Middlesbrough seeing the opportunity because apparently Kieran Scott has been watching him for a couple of years, I think. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the opportunity and just dived straight in and got him.
He's all right, that Kieran Scott, isn't he? He's all right.
Where are you going with this one, Steve?
I'll let you know a little bit later. He's done well. Obviously, we know about the news about Bangura. It's long-term, we know. But it's good. I know, JD, we spoke about, you know, we don't really want loan signings because we want more permanent, more, you know, players that are going to stick around for longer than 6 months. But I think this will benefit us greatly, wasn't it? You know, give Engel a bit of a kick to move on and hopefully boost our left-hand side.
Yeah, the thing is, we haven't got any sort of natural cover, have we, should anything happen to Engel. So this was a move that was needed, really, because of Bangura's injury. It was sort of totally out of the blue. There was no link previous to it, no hint that he might be on his way to Middlesbrough. It just sort of like happened and everybody was caught a bit by surprise. But it's got the potential to be a very, very good loan signing. And we'll see how it goes. We don't know as yet whether there's any discussions being had about after the loan agreement ends. We don't know, so we'll just have to wait and see. But he's got now 5 months I'm saying 5 months because I'm putting us in the playoff final then. He's got 5 months for him to prove that the loan move was good for him and good for us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I'm with you. You know, 5 months to bed himself in and give it a good crack and see where we end up with him. But Bandy, you're from that you know, you're a bit further down Yorkshire than we are. Anything being mentioned about Luke Thomas? I mean, obviously there's not a lot of word come to us. But I say anything.
Nothing, Jack.
Nothing.
Like we've alluded to, it just came out of nowhere. Did that signing?
Mm.
Personally, I prefer that to happen. There's no sort of scurrilous rumours. Mm. There's not a long drawn out saga about is he coming, is he not. I just happily see a signing and think, right, okay, read up on him, see what he's all about. I'm not even sure whether he'll start. I do think he's been brought in as cover. I think it would be unfair, really, on Engel. I'd have him down as one of my most improved players.
Yeah. Oh, so gotcha.
For him to be displaced, I think he's got to be some player. I know, like Dicko said, he's played Premier League, so he might be infinitely better. But I do think it would be unfair on Engel if he was, knocked down the pecking order, so to speak.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, hopefully, comes in and does a job. He, fills a void that we've got. So, but it's not.
I must admit, my first thought was not another defender. I'm a little bit more creative. I like to see players on the ball and creating chances and scoring some bloody goals. You know, that's priority. Mm. But obviously, it is a cover move. I'm pretty certain we'll bang her out for the season.
Do you think either of them could play further up the pitch? You know, either Engel move further up or Luke Thomas play ahead of Engel. Do you think that could be a possibility?
Would. They could obviously play one in front, one behind, but I do think I've got an idea that they're probably quite similar, and I think that would be too samey, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I think unless one is going to go on the overlap and whip balls in, but I think he'll stick to the 4-2-3-1. He'll just play a steady left back who's capable of bombing on.
I don't see.
Still seems to be a bit of a problem. Seems to be a bit of a problem in the opposition third still, I think.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I don't see them playing together because neither of them are blessed with great pace. Luke Thomas hasn't got great pace. He's good on the ball. He's got a great delivery. He can play as a wing-back, but he's not blessed with great pace, but he is a really good footballer. But I slightly disagree with what Bandy was saying about him coming in as cover. I think he's coming into play. I think he's a better player than Lucas Engel. And I know Engel's improved greatly, but he still has some poor moments for me defensively. You're on about him coming in might give Engel a kick. Well, it'll be one more than he got against Chelsea, for example. So I really hope, it does help Engel's game improve. But I think Luke Thomas is coming into play. I mean, he's played over 70 games in the Premier League. He's won the FA Cup. He was in England under 21 regular. He's got about 15 caps for England under 21s. And he was highly rated. And he was on Gareth Southgate's radar less than 18 months ago for the England squad. So I don't think he's coming to Middlesbrough to, be cover. I think he's coming to rejuvenate his profile and his career. And he might not start against Sunderland, but I'll be really, really surprised if come the end of the season, Luke Thomas isn't an absolute shoo-in at left back.
I was trying to say exactly the same, John's Bandy. We'll obviously see what happens on Sunday. Just come straight in. We don't know, do we? I suppose. So no one really knows a lot about where it's come from or what's happened. Yeah, we just gotta trust that Kieran Scott's done a good job. I'm sure he has, and we brought in another gem to pull us through the rest of the season. So, yeah.
Steve, you keep dropping his name in there. Something going on?
I'm having an affair with him. There you go. Didn't expect that, did you? No.
That's conjured images in my head that I need to get shut up quickly.
Send me him. since you brought him up, I was going to wait till later on, but I have mentioned his name twice, so I'll let you mention it a third time, JD. We've got someone quite special joining us next week, haven't we?
Yes, yeah, hopefully. I hope there's no last minute hitches, but yeah, Kieran Scott has agreed to come on the podcast, so we can have a chat with him and find out about how MFC's recruitment department is set up.
Yeah.
And so I would ask any listeners now or anybody who's listening on catch up, if you have a question for Kieran, please let us know.
Yeah, and if you know how to snip things, please don't snip that I'm having an affair with him. I don't want that to get round. Okay.
Probably won't come on now after you've heard that.
I think that'll get him on even more, don't you?
Jacko, you like the Borough Kyle Walker, you?
I haven't got the speed of him, miss. I ain't got no speed of him. Although I bet he hasn't done a half marathon. I have. So there you go. Next week, head of recruitment, head of football operations, Kieran Scott, will be part of the 12 Man podcast live on the Red Radio, Facebook. So, yeah, get your questions in. And I mean, I can answer one straight away. No, he doesn't use a fax machine, so please don't send us that. Right. I don't want to hear about that. So, yeah, there you go. Nice little bit of breaking news for you. So, right. And also, I just want to go back to Chelsea as well. Before we set off home, I mean, John mentioned how good of a job that Jason and his co-driver did with us on Tuesday. Unfortunately, the sister bus was in a slight incident. If you did see anything, please do let Delta coaches know. Their window got put through, which was ridiculous. Quite ridiculous. A tourist company got their window put through by tourists. Weird, isn't it? But yeah. So if you know anything, you know, let them know, because they're still trying to find out who did it. So yeah. Right. Here we go. The derby. That's not
still
a derby.
Quite menacing down there, I think.
Oh.
I detected coming out when it was dark.
Yeah.
You just needing to get back to the car, the bus. There was pockets of lads hanging about, and it still had that. Even though it's a very cosmopolitan, wealthy area now, it's still got that gritty, horrible edge to it. And I don't think that'll ever leave.
No. I felt that good. I felt that before I went in. I mean, me and my mate Pete waited before the game to one of his mates to hand the ticket over to get in, and you just felt there was a bit of needle, there was a bit of something between the fans. Obviously, there's a lot of history between the two clubs, fully get that. So, yeah, something was obviously going to happen, wasn't it? So, and unfortunately, it did. But, yeah, if you know anything, let them know. Right, the derby that's not a derby. The derby they don't like to call a derby. But when we pop up and we do what we did to them back in October, all of a sudden it is a derby. And they care a little bit about this one. So, JD, they don't come into this in the greatest bit of form, both on and off the pitch. There's a lot of unrest between the fans and Michael Beale. The players won out. I know they've got a couple of wins on the board, and they are above us, but they're struggling a little bit. Is this the time to pounce on them again and have another go at them?
Well, if they're struggling, where does that put us? They seem to be getting... They seem to be pulling a few results out. I mean, a 3-1 win against Stoke was quite good, especially when on the morning of the game, one of their players decides that he doesn't want to play for them anymore. I mean, he must have... Michael Beale must have been over the moon that Alex Pritchard has pipped in for the most hated man on Weir side after that announcement.
I wouldn't go that far, John.
You can't take Sunderland lightly, to be fair, you know, because they have a knack of just pulling out results. They'll obviously be wanting revenge from our thumping that we give them down at their place. So it's not going to be easy. We've got to be very, very cautious that we don't think that this is an easy game, because it's going to be far from it.
Oh, yeah, completely get that. By the way, that victory on Saturday was their first since New Year's Day. How's that for you? I say they're a bit like us, you know. They hit waves, you know, all of a sudden they'll be doing all right, and all of a sudden they'll dip really quickly and a couple of defeats. But... Diggle, you've got to fancy your chances, especially when I know they're getting a couple of results, like JD's just said, but you know, you've got to be going into this in a good frame of mind, and to be calling your manager out a week before a derby, it's not the greatest thing to do, is it?
No, as I say, they do have problems behind the scenes, and I think they're fragile. I think the confidence is fragile. I think the first goal will be important. I think if Middlesbrough can get the first goal, that'll be massive for us. But like when JD says they can pull results out, they do, but not on Teesside. Because if you go back, I've had a look, as I do with my statistics, and since 1963, in the league, they've only won twice, in 1997 and 2005. So they don't pull results out very often on Teesside. And I expect that trait to continue. And the reason I always say this, I said it last season, and I've said it before, is because we treat it as a proper derby game. Mm-hmm. And they, I'm saying they, meaning their supporters, in the belief around the club is, it's not really a main derby. It's a biggish game, but not really a big game. And I think they bring that onto the pitch time and time again against Middlesbrough, and they don't learn the lesson. And Middlesbrough come out with a better attitude, with a better frame of mind, and generally get the job done. Now, the other thing in Middlesbrough's favour for the game on Sunday is obviously we've got Luke Thomas available to play. Mm-hmm. We've got Luke Aylin back, who's going to be a great player to have in a derby game. Luke Aylin, he's back. You've got Sam Greenwood back, and you've got Finn Azaz back. We've also got, you know, options off the bench now with a couple of players coming back against Chelsea.
Yeah.
So I think Middlesbrough's lineup hopefully will be a little bit stronger than it's been over the last few weeks. I mean, we don't know if we're going to get a new signing before the window shuts. I'm still praying that we'll get a striker over the line, because I still maintain that if we don't, we won't get promoted. That's how important I think it is to Middlesbrough Football Club, this window, which I'll be interested in to talk to Kieran Scott about if we do or we don't. I think if we don't, I don't see us getting promoted. But I still think Middlesbrough will have too much for Sunderland, especially at the Riverside, full house. And I expect we to get the job done.
Yeah. I mean, I'll ask you in a minute, Bandy, what your thoughts are on the game. But quickly back to you, Dicko. How pivotal is it that we keep Morgan Rodgers? Obviously, there's a lot of money being whacked about how much he's worth and how much he's not worth, and we're pushing him all away and they're preparing a fourth bid. You know, how crucial is it that we keep that young lad at the club?
It depends what we do with the money. It's not pivotal. If we sell him and make a huge profit and then bring somebody in with that money that's going to give us some goals up front, i.e. a new striker, I think it's quite telling that if Middlesbrough let Morgan Rodgers go for decent money and don't replace him with a striker, so we've lost Morgan Rodgers and haven't brought a striker in, that we can't be that serious about getting promoted this season. That's just my opinion on it. If Morgan Rodgers go, we have got, you know, Riley McGree coming back, we've got Sammy Silvera, we've got Azaz now, we have got players to plug that gap. But if he goes and we don't replace him with another striker, somebody that's going to add goals to the team, well, that's very telling for me. And nobody's going to say that behind the scenes. Certainly Michael Carrick isn't going to say it. But that's just the way I feel about it. If Middlesbrough are serious, not just about making the top six, but getting promoted this season, I think it's really important that we bring in more goals before the window shuts.
I tend to agree with that. But would you keep him? Yes or no?
Me personally,
yeah.
I would. You always want to keep your best players, so yeah. I'd be happy if Morgan Rodgers stayed, because we can always cash in the summer and possibly get more money from him in the summer if he delivers us into the playoffs and has more good performances and scores more goals. You might get more money from him in the summer. So at the moment, unless we've got a decent striker lined up that's going to guarantee us some goals, you keep him.
JD, would you keep him?
It won't go if Villa don't meet Borough's valuation. It's got to be right for the club. As for the player, I hope the interest that Villa have shown, Even if the deal doesn't come off this window, I hope it doesn't. So I hope he doesn't go into petulant, sulky mood. I hope he goes into the mode where he thinks, right, okay, I could have more suitors. I'm obviously being looked at. Villa are one of them. There could be other clubs who want to look at me. I want to play Premier League, so I'll put my best efforts into the rest of the season. And if I can't do it with Middlesbrough, at least I've shown Premier League clubs what I'm capable of. So I hope that I hope he stays.
Yeah.
But obviously, like I said, I've just said now, and I said last week, I think if the club's valuation of him is met, he'll go. If that doesn't happen, I hope we see a sensible, focused Morgan Rodgers when the window shuts.
There we go. Bandy, would you keep him?
There's a whiff of inevitability about this move. As with a lot of situations like this, sometimes it might be worth the players worth to just sit tight and be promised a move in the summer when it's right for both parties, when you can, you know, negotiate a proper fee. And there's a lot of figures being bandied about, 10, 12, 15 million. I mean, for me, that's outrageous money. You would snap the hands off, but we probably need him to get us over the line this season because of his form. He's been one of our form players, and unless we do bring in a striker like Dicko says, then I would try and keep him and then promise him that move and move him on in the summer. 5 months isn't a long time to wait. If Villa are desperate or West Ham are desperate, then they'll sit tight as well, and then they'll both slug it out in the summer for him, and it might even ramp up his fee even more, so we could start a bit of a bidding war. There seems to be this like almighty panic about having to sell him as though we're broke. You know, that money will come and find us in the summer, I'm pretty certain. And if we do promise him that move, just say to the lad, look, knuckle down, kid, you've got 5 months, work your backside off, and let's see how far we can get up that table. You never know, you might even finish the season with a Wembley appearance, and who knows, he might even be in the Premier League with us. But exactly. that's pie in the sky, to be honest. I think he'll be away, but let's try and keep him and see where we end up.
Absolutely,
that would be my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you, lads. Ball's no caught. He's our player. He's under contract, and under a long-term contract as well. So hopefully he keeps the toys in the pram and he gets his head down, works hard if he's going to stay. So I'd like him to stay. I like Morgan Rodgers. I think he's a brilliant prospect. I think he'll only get better with age as well. So yeah, fingers crossed. Right, Bandy, I'll ask you about Sunderland now. Thoughts on the weekend? Obviously, thoughts. It's a massive, massive game again.
It always is against Sunderland, isn't it? I think we've got a situation here where we've got two consistently inconsistent sides going at it. I don't think there'd be one for the purists, if I'm honest. We're hit and miss. Mm-hmm. They've been in dire form. Obviously, the fans are revolting against the manager. But you're only as good as your last game, and we've just been spanked 6, and they've just won.
Yeah.
So as soon as they got that win, I thought, could have done without that, because the tails might be up slightly, but I don't think they'll come to try and beat us. I don't think that's in their psyche. I don't think they're good enough. I think they'll come and try and spoil, not to the extent to what Rotherham did, but I think it'll be a very ugly, tight, dirty game full of time wasting, and I think we'll just get over the line. We've had quite a few 1-0s at home, so I think we'll just pip 1-0. I don't think they're quite good enough to come and beat us. But it's all about attitude. If we don't want to win as much as they want to win, then that could turn the game in their favour. We've got to be bang at it and treat it as a proper, proper game. Another cup final.
Exactly, because that's how those fans will look at it. You know, I mean, it's you know, I don't care if they don't care about it. I care. I absolutely care. It's our nearest rivals, you know. I know they'll keep saying, yeah, but you've got Hartlepool and stuff. Behave yourself, right? You know what I mean? They mean nothing. They mean nothing. Sorry, but they don't. This one means something. And if they say they don't care, I remember what it was like coming down them stairs and walking across that car park when we won 4-0. And I saw all your faces. I know you care. You know, you can't mask that. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Of course it is. I mean, they've got a couple of players that may be leaving. There's obviously Pritchard's, you know, up sticks and said, I'm not coming back anymore. That's it, me done. I think Jack Clark's him. He's got a deal over his head at the moment that's been negotiated. There's another one. I'd love
Patrick Robert is injured as well, which is good for him.
Yeah.
I'd love it if Clark went, my God. been absolutely meltdown.
Yeah, if they're without Robertson Clark on Sunday, that's a big boost for us.
It's massive because that's their pace, isn't it? That's their outlet and their creativity all in one goal, because they haven't got a prolific striker this season, have they? I mean, I think I watched one game. I think it might have been the Hull game. I didn't see the Stoke game at the weekend, but I think it was the Hull game. They were playing Joe Bellingham up front. I thought that was a bit strange. A bit of a strange decision. Well,
Clark's their top scorer, and then I think after that, there's only about two or three players who've scored four goals, you know. So it's, if he's not playing Clark, massive boost for us.
Yes, it's you know, I mean, with that being said then, JD, how would you like us to approach? I mean, you know, how many, because obviously we've got a lot of players coming back in. Say Dicko reels them off. You've got the likes of Greenwood, Azaz, potentially Luke Thomas coming in as well. You know, would you how many of them would you potentially put back in? You know, the players have had a good rest as well. I mean, bear in mind, a 12-day rest since Chelsea, so a lot of time on the training pitch to put things right.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we've got a lot of options, except up top, really, which is a shame. But depending on what happens with Morgan Rodgers, if he's gone, then again we have to sort of look at our options at the final third of the pitch. But we've got quite a lot. Across the middle, back four was fairly steady. You know, you're going to say Ayling's going to start. You're going to say it's going to be either Engel or Luke Thomas. So we've got a decent left back there, and the two centre halves could be Fry, Vandenberg or Clark. Two out of them three.
Could be Matt there.
Yeah, that's right. He was on the bench, wasn't he? Yeah, so it could be McNair. Yeah. Well, remains to be seen. There's another option there that we can put in there. And then across the middle of the park, with Azaz back, with Greenwood back. I don't know on Jones's fitness, to be fair. I haven't read out about his fitness, whether or not he'll be available. But we've got quite a lot of options across there, you know, Balassa, Hackney, Housen, Greenwood, Azaz. So there's a fair bit there. We've got Force as well, you know. So we've got enough options, except in the final third, you know. But I'm hoping that we should have enough in our midfield and the players we decide to put up top to trouble Sunderland, and I'm hopeful that we can come out as victors on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say we've got plenty of options coming in, and also, you know, there's a couple of days left in the transfer window. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. We may do a Luke Thomas, and all of a sudden the striker pops up, and you think, where's that come from? So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting couple of days, an interesting week again. Before I get your predictions, Bandy, have you got a copy of that picture you drew?
Yeah, I've got the original here.
Yeah. Hold it up for us. These are for people that are privileged to see us on Facebook and YouTube. So this man cleverly drew.
Can you see it?
Yeah,
that's okay.
Hold it there, lovely stud. My lovely partner there. So as you can see, Bandy drew an unbelievable picture of the fans from the first leg of the cup tie against Chelsea, which are available. If you contact him, he'll send you a copy out. He'll send you a power how to buy one, etc. A4, A3, your options. I've got one at home.
I reckon that's from your seat, isn't it, Bandy?
I took that picture that night with this in mind.
Says yeah,
I can. I can help you say, John.
Yeah, well, it was just fair play, good on you. Yeah.
When I saw the red faction display, I thought I've got to latch onto that, because I thought it was magnificent. Yeah,
it was. Well, hey, you're an entrepreneur. You're hired. Yeah, and I think I've looked at that picture. I think I'm a little bit in the sort of bottom right corner.
with Matt, John.
Yeah, I do.
Every week.
I'm further down. Behind the goal.
Are you in here, or are you over there?
North Stand. Yeah, down by the goal.
Trying to get me.
Yeah, no, down here by the goal. North Stand. Yeah, front of you.
There's you with your flank there. There's you.
That's
there.
Right. That's me.
So there you go. That's available to buy now. I say it's an unbelievable picture. He's kindly sent me a copy, so we're gonna
get it arrived.
It has, yeah.
Yes.
Obviously, it's not with me right now, but yes, it has. I'm getting it framed, yeah. Getting my copy framed up and up on the wall. That's amazing, mate. It's absolutely amazing. And we're gonna give it away to one of you lucky listeners. So all we ask is you. Predict the score for the upcoming game against Sunderland. Message us. Stick in any time scorer as well. Obviously, if no one gets the any time score, we'll look at the score itself. We'll draw one name out and we'll let you know next week who wins it. There you go. So it gives you an incentive. Get in touch with us. 12 Man Podcast Facebook page at 12 Man Borough on X or Twitter or whatever name Elon Musk has given it this week. Get in touch with us and let us know what your score predictions are. We all share the podcast here, there and everywhere, so let us know. And it could be you next week, because we'll let you know next week who's won it. So there you go. Right.
Andy, for those who might may enter but may be unlucky and they want a copy, how can they get hold of one?
They can just go onto Twitter and message me, and I'll message them straight back. If they follow me, then I can direct message them and give them details from there.
Are they available in different sizes?
A4 and A3.
JJ, if you listened 5 minutes ago, I said they're available in A4 and A3.
Getting a double plug.
So there you go. It really is that simple. That's how I got in touch with Bandy. Obviously, I chat to Bandy all the time, but he messaged me out to buy one. I bought one. There you go. Job done. That's waiting to go up, and I'll put a picture up online to say that it's there. And it looks absolutely unbelievable as well. So there you go. Right.
Are they available in different sizes?
Well, funny enough, I've got both sizes at home, so there you go. Right. Prediction time.
Can you hear me, mother?
Can you hear me now? Right. Prediction time. I'll get this back on track. Right. I've gone 3-0. Marcus Force any time. It's pretty self-explanatory to me. I don't see them beating us. I really don't. I think, yeah, about time we did the double over them lot. And it would make me so happy coming back here next Monday and saying, well, look what we've just done. So there you go. Jason's gone 3-1 Greenwood anytime. So I think he's still looking for a windscreen, bless him. So there you go. He knows I'm only joking. JD, I'll come to you.
2-0.
There you go.
Morgan Rogers.
Oh,
that's confidence for you now.
You might not even be here, John.
Well, okay then. Can I do a substitute? Force.
Right. So Force, if he ends up leaving. Someone's someone's keen for a picture. Dick, I'll come to you.
I will go 2-1 Middlesbrough and Azaz to score any time.
No problem. And
he's got to do better than his last performance, hasn't he?
Yeah. First day in there, isn't it? But Bandy, I'll come to you. I know you said 1-0, we'll nick it. Who's your first goal scorer? Because you've got history with this. You know what you're doing with this.
Right. Same score as Dicko. A bit of panache in a very bitter and twisted game. He'll provide the one moment of quality, which will be enough to get us the 3 points. I don't think it'd be pretty. I think we're both too, like I said before, we're just both a little bit ragged at the moment, and I don't think it'd be 12 o'clock kickoffs on a Sunday don't sit well with me either. They're a bit.
Oh, me.
They'd be blustery and wet, and yeah.
I think a win's vital. Yeah. We'd all like to do it comfortably, but we'll just take the 3 points if it comes our way. Thank you very much.
100%.
No, go back up the A19.
Yeah, and stay there.
Are you going 2-1 Azaz as well, Bandy, yeah?
No, 1-0 Azaz.
1-0.
Oh, 1-0 Azaz. All right, okay.
1-0, yeah.
Don't worry, Dicko.
We said that earlier. Aren't you listening, Dicko?
Come on, Dicko.
Just a second. I want to ask. Just a second before I forget. I want to ask him what size those grids are. In case I want one.
Who's your first scorer again, Dicko?
Morgan Rogers.
Put it all in down, man. Oh, good God. Right, on that lovely note, well, these are starting to get out of control. I'm going to call it there. Right, so yes, get in touch, get your scores in, and we'll let you know next Monday who's won that lovely print of Bandy's fantastic drawing. So, yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you, boys, for popping on.
No problem. Don't forget, everybody, tune in next week when we've got Kieran Scott hopefully joining us. And if you have any questions for him, please send them in.
Yes. And as Stuart Gawley, he's just put...
That lad's getting him in.
Class, isn't it? Class. JD's going to...
Yeah, it's really good.
JD's done an absolute steal there. And as Stuart Gawley's just put, size matters, lads. So there you go. on that lovely note, I'm going to let him be. Oh, dear me. Right, on that lovely note, I'll bid you farewell. I'll talk to you next week. Arrivederci. Up the Borough. Be seeing you.
Up the Borough.
Up the Borough.
Yes, fellas, really enjoyed it.